Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the weekly podcast coming at you from the beautiful suburb of Talpiot, just down the hill from the original home of Shai Agnon himself. Talking at you is Rafe Melhado, a current Pardes student and Urbana native who hails all the way from the corn and soybean fields of central Illinois. Wherever you may find yourself on this fine day, we're glad to have you as a subscriber to our podcast. With your help, we continue to be the top-rated Torah podcast on the internet. From all of us here at Pardes, we thank you for telling your friends about us. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parashat Be'alotcha. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashgiach Ruchani, spiritual guidance counselor. So, without further ado, I give you Rav Meir, the soothsayer.
This week's parsha is Parshat Be'alotcha. I would like to examine the story of the sin of the Jewish people in Kivrot HaTa'ava, but more specifically to focus on the role of Moshe, his leadership in this story. In chapter 11, verse 4, we're told that the Asafsuf Asher B'Kirbo, the riffraff in the midst of the Jewish people, Hitavu Ta'ava, had this desire. Vayashuvu Vayivku, they come back, they return and they begin crying. Gam B'nei Yisrael, also the Jewish people. Vayomru Mi Yachilenu Basar, and they said, who would give us to eat meat? Verse 5, Zacharnu Et Hadaga Asher Nochal B'Mitzrayim Chinam. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt for free. Et ha-kishuim, the squash. Et ha-avatichim, the watermelons. Et ha-chatzir, et ha-betzalim, et ha-shumim, the turnips, and the onions, and the garlic. Va'ata nafshenu yivesha ein kol. And now our souls are dried up. There is nothing. Bilti el haman einenu. Our eyes are only towards the manna. And if we skip for a moment to verse 10, Vayishma Moshe et ha'am, and Moshe heard the people, bochel l'mishpechotav, crying according to their families, ish lefetach ahalo, each man at the entrance to his tent, Vayicharaf Hashem ma'od, and God is very angry, uve'enei Moshe ra, and in the eyes of Moshe, it is evil. In this story, it is not clear what is it exactly that the Jewish people want. Ostensibly, they say that they want meat. But then they have this nostalgic recollection of what it was like in Egypt, where they had fish, where they had vegetables, they had onions and garlic. So what is it that they want? And it seems it isn't so much what they want as much as what they don't want. They are very unhappy with the man. And they perhaps articulate it when they say, our souls are dry. We have nothing. And in last year's podcast, we spoke about the Jews having nothing because they don't have everything. And in a certain way, the attitude of the Jewish people here echoes the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Although God gives them all the trees of the garden, commands them to actually eat from them. There is one tree which God holds back, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And when they can't have that tree, they have nothing. Although the Torah describes at length the exceptional features of the man in terms of its sight, in terms of its taste, the man has the ability to provide the Jews with everything which they want. And yet somehow, it is not what they want because of their desire. Moshe hears the people crying according to their families. The simple pshat is that people are congregating. A man at the entrance to his tent. This is something which is a public phenomenon. Everyone is now upset, murmuring. There is a midrashic comment which says, now, what does it mean they are crying according to their families? They are crying of the various sexual prohibitions, of how somehow they are very much locked into their families, very limited in their sexual activity. The sin here of the Jewish people is a sin of desire, a sin of lust. They want that which they don't have. No matter what you give them, they will always want something else. It is the bizarre attraction of the prohibited. We're told in the end of verse 11:10, what is happening is evil in the eyes of Moshe. And then in verse 11, Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, and Moshe says to God, why have you acted evilly towards your servant? Why have I not found favor in your eyes to place the burden of this people upon me? At face value, it seems that what Moshe is saying now goes back to what Moshe said originally when he was given the mission to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, and after his first encounter with Pharaoh, which results in a total disaster. Moshe comes back to God and complains in Exodus chapter 5, verse 22. Why have you acted evilly to this people? Why have you sent me? From the moment I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has acted evilly towards this people, and you have not saved them. Interestingly, over there Moshe says, why have you acted evilly towards your people? Here Moshe says, why have you acted evilly to me? Why have I not found favor in your eyes, that you have placed the burden of this people upon me? There are two ways that we can read what Moshe is saying here. One way is the sense of utter frustration on the part of Moshe, the feeling that after having taken them, the people, out of the land of Egypt, crossing the Red Sea, bringing them to Sinai, constructing the tabernacle, arranging the camp, preparing them for their entry into the land of Israel, for them to now complain, for them to now express their desire. And it's not only expressing a desire, but it's a whole philosophy. It's as if Moshe is back to square one. The whole purpose of the Exodus is to transform the Jewish people into being a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a kingdom of priests, a holy people. And all of a sudden it seems that the people have completely lost sight of this glorious mission and are very much steeped into material desire, creature comforts. It is very understandable that Moshe would be exasperated. Another reading of this verse is Moshe's attempt to mitigate what the Jewish people are saying, what the Jewish people are doing, by taking the rap, by somehow deflecting the blame from the Jewish people to himself, perhaps even to God, when he says, it's your fault. Why did you take me? Why did you place the burden of the people upon me? The reason why they're behaving this way is because they have a problematic leader. I leave these two options for the moment. In verse 12, Moshe continues and says, Was I pregnant with this people? Did I give birth to them? That you say to me, carry, bear this people in your bosom, as the nursing father carries a suckling on the land that you have sworn to their fathers. And in verse 13, from where will I have meat to give to this people, that they cry upon me, saying, give us meat and we shall eat? I am unable alone to bear the burden of this people. It's too heavy for me. If thus you do to me, please, I beseech you, kill me. If I have found favor in your eyes, do not let me see my evil. In many different ways, Moshe is expressing the difficulty, the burden of being the leader of the Jewish people, the burden of carrying it all by himself. The imagery which Moshe conjures up is fascinating. Moshe says, am I a nursing father? Was I pregnant with this people? Did I give birth to them? What does Moshe want to say with this? We know that Moshe is Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe our teacher, Moshe the lawgiver. Moshe's image in the eyes of the people is the image of din, of justice, the standard of justice. Moshe is the one who commands them the law, who holds them accountable, who raises the bar, the expectation of where they should be going. That image of Moshe, the lawgiver, is expressed in the most extreme way. When Moshe comes down from the mountain with the second tablets at the sin of the golden calf, and when Moshe smashes the tablets, and when Moshe destroys the calf and burns it, when Moshe kills all those involved in the worship of the calf, Moshe comes across as the symbol of authority, of a leader who does not compromise, who has demands of the people, who will not tolerate their slipping. But here Moshe is expressing that perhaps what the Jewish people need is a leader who is compassionate, is a leader who can be where the people are, who can understand them, who is able to somehow tolerate their failings. When Moshe says, "From where do I have meat to give it to them?" The question is not, how can I get meat? The question is, how do I cater? How do I relate to their desires? Nachmanides makes a very interesting comment on verse 14. When Moshe says, "I can't bear this people alone," Moshe's begging for assistance. Nachmanides says, Moshe does not need elders to give the people meat. Where are they going to get it from? What Moshe needs are many leaders who will be able to assuage their anger, who will be able to speak to their hearts when they're complaining. Moshe needs people who will hold their hand, who can listen, who can somehow calm them down. And what is God's response? Vayomer in verse 16, God says to Moshe, "Gather 70 elders, 70 men from the elders of Israel, whom you know, they are the elders of the people and their policemen. And you will take them to the tent of meeting, and they will stand there with you. And I will come down and speak to you there and transfer the spirit which is upon you and place it upon them. And they will bear the burden of the people so that you don't do it alone." What is now happening is the delegation of authority. And how do we look at this? On the one hand, this is something which Moshe wants. It's something which in the end will enable him to more easily deal with the people. Moshe needs these intermediaries who can somehow be the buffer between him and the people, who can speak to the people in their language, hear the people, empathize with the people. There is a Midrashic comment which says, "Who are these elders that will be taken now? These are the ones who had compassion upon the Jewish people when Pharaoh gave the decree and said, 'The Jewish people are lazy. We have to increase their workload. Don't give them the raw materials anymore to make the bricks. And they have to continue fulfilling the quota.' These policemen, rather than beating the Jews, they suffered the brunt of Pharaoh's anger. They were beaten by their overlords. These are the people who have a track record demonstrating compassion, empathy. They are the ones who are fit to be Moshe's assistants. But it is important to understand that although they will be a significant component in Moshe's leadership, they signal the beginning of the end of Moshe's leadership. They signal the erosion in Moshe's authority. We can see this later on in the parsha. In verse 24, Moshe goes out. He speaks to the people. He gathers the 70 men. He has them stand surrounding the tent. And then God comes down in the cloud and he transfers the spirit which is on Moshe, places it on the 70 men. And they begin prophesying. They don't cease. But in verse 26, there are two men who remain in the camp. One is named Eldad, the other Medad. And the spirit comes upon them also. And they were in the writings. They didn't go out to the tent. and they prophesy now in the camp. There is a Midrashic comment which says that Moshe chose 72 elders, 6 from each tribe, but in the end he only needed 70 of the 72, so that each of them had to take like a lottery. They had a bowl, they took out a piece of paper. On 70 of the papers, there was an X designating that they were chosen. 2 were blank. According to the Midrash, Eldad Umedad had actually chosen a paper, a lot, which was not blank. But in order to not embarrass the ones who received a blank piece of paper, they remained in the camp. And because of that, they were worthy of prophecy. But what do we find in verse 27? The lad runs and he tells Moshe, Eldad Umedad are prophesying in the camp. And then Yoshua ben Nun, the servant of Moshe, from his boys, his chosen ones, says, Moshe, lock them up. Shut them up. And Moshe's response is, are you jealous for me? Would that all the people of God would be prophets, that God should place His Spirit upon them. I mentioned earlier that the very fact that there are 70 elders who are now assisting Moshe is an erosion of Moshe's authority. But that authority erodes even more when all of a sudden there are 2 people prophesying in the camp, prophesying independently of Moshe. The 70 elders have the spirit which is transferred from Moshe to them, but they are all in the same context. But these 2 are doing it independently. Hence, the reaction of Yoshua. What they are doing is an affront to Moshe. It undermines Moshe. There is a rabbinic comment in the tractate Masechet Sanhedrin, which says that the problem is not only in the act of prophecy, but also on the content of the prophecy. And according to one opinion there, Eldad and Medad are prophesying, Moshe will die. Joshua will be the one to bring them into the land of Israel. If we take this rabbinic comment, it seems that already at this point, there is a sense Moshe ultimately will stop being the leader of the Jewish people. Eventually, Joshua will replace him. This is, in fact, the beginning of the end of Moshe's leadership. Joshua, the loyal student, the loyal servant of Moshe, cannot bear to see this slap in the face, this deterioration which is occurring before his eyes, the unraveling. And he says, let's nip it in the bud. And note Moshe's response. Moshe says, prophecy is not something which he has a monopoly on. On the contrary, it would be better if everyone could be a prophet. And by the same token, one could extrapolate and say that Moshe also sees authority as not being something which he should have a monopoly on. Maybe it's good to have this decentralization, because ultimately, God is the authority. In the next story, in chapter 12, we have Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe, about this Cushite woman that he had married. And it's not clear exactly what is troubling them. But one thing is clear in verse 2. They say, did God speak only with Moshe? Did God not also speak with us? Somehow, Miriam and Aharon are equating their prophecy with Moshe's prophecy. And because of that, expressing criticism of Moshe somehow acting differently than them, acting in what might be seen as a higher religious profile than them. And then God speaks to Miriam and Aaron in verse 6 and 7 and says, listen to my words. If you have prophecy, your prophecy is through a vision, through a dream. but not so my servant Moshe, the one who was most trusted in my house. I speak to him face by face. I speak to him not through riddles. He sees the image of God. Why were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moshe? There is a Midrashic comment that says that Miriam is very disturbed that Moshe has separated from his wife. And the rabbis say that Miriam was unaware of that until Eldad Umeidad began prophesying. And then all of a sudden, she overheard Moshe's wife, Tzipora, saying, I feel sorry for their wives. And then all of a sudden she realized that Moshe had separated from Tzipporah because he needed to be totally devoted to God, to be in this state of absolute purity, to be ready at every moment to hear the word of God. And that is why Miriam and Aaron said, but we are prophets and we maintain normal family lives. And God's response is, your prophecy, your level of prophecy, is not at all comparable to Moshe. Moshe is another league. Moshe speaks to me face by face. Why is it that Miriam and Aaron speak now? The simple way, according to the Midrash, is because all of a sudden now they become aware of what's going on in Moshe's personal life. But perhaps there is another element as well. Once Moshe's leadership has somehow been eroded, then that creates an opening which leads to this further erosion. By Moshe delegating the authority to the 70 elders, he has somehow been lessened now. Once he is lessened, he is quote-unquote the first among equals. It creates an opening for Miriam and Aharon to speak against Moshe, and to somehow lose sight of the magnitude of who Moshe is. Perhaps this is a result of Moshe's humility. As the Torah itself says, V'ha'ish Moshe anav mi'od mikol ha'adam asher al pnei ha'adama, that Moses is the most humble of men on the face of the earth. In verse 3, chapter 12. Our parsha, in many ways, is very tragic. The beginning of the parsha is very, very beautiful. The Jewish people have been organized. The Jewish people have now created this beautiful structure of the camp. They are poised to enter the land of Israel. The cloud and the ark are leading them to the land of their destiny. And yet, in a moment, the Jewish people destroy their reality. Moshe, who has brought the Jewish people so far, who has carried the burden of the Jewish people from the slavery in Egypt, through the Exodus, through Sinai, through all the trials and tribulations in the desert. Moshe, who has gone through so much, who is on the verge of completing his mission right at the threshold, sees how it all unravels. It is tragic because there is this gap between the Jewish people and between Moshe. Moshe creates a model of leadership, but the Jewish people are not ready to rise to the occasion. And this deterioration of Moshe's leadership, this gap, is then reflected in next week's parsha, in the sin of the spies, when the Jewish people, there is a total breakdown, and Moshe is unable to stem the tide. Let me end on a more positive note. Our parsha begins with a commandment to Aaron. Baha'alotcha etaneirot, when you light the candles, el mul pnei hamenorah ya'iru shivat haneirot, facing the middle branch, should the other candles be lit, should they light. The rabbis understand and derive a halakha from the word baha'alotcha, that Aaron needs to light the menorah to the point where the light is able to stand on its own. Very often we know when you light a candle, you can light it, but it might immediately go out. But sometimes you have to keep the match there until the wick has caught the flame, so that the flame is now able to burn on its own. The rabbis see this law as being a symbol for the relationship between a teacher and a student. A teacher enlightens his student. A teacher sets them on fire. But the goal is to not just give them the light, but to enable them to shine on their own. Moshe was able to transmit that fire. But the challenge, the difficulty, was how do you get the people to be independent, to be able to burn on their own? Somehow there was too much of a gap between where Moshe was and when where the people are. Moshe needed to have those assistants to somehow mediate between the two. Perhaps it wasn't Moshe's fault. Perhaps it was the problem of a whole generation which was incapable of making the move from slavery to freedom. Joshua is somehow able to bring the next generation to have that sense of independence, the destiny, to be able to light their own fire. This is a lesson to us all. Sometimes we can have the greatest leaders, the greatest teachers, but in the end they will not be able to accomplish their mission because they need to be on the same wavelength as the people they're leading. They need to be able to not only set up the bar, but to be able to also be the nursing mother, to be able to have that compassion, that empathy, to be able to speak to people in the language which they understand, to have the patience to be able to handle all of the idiosyncrasies of the people, all of their failures, to accept them where they are, and to try to move them up step by step. That is a great challenge, but that is our mandate, whether as leaders, as teachers, as parents, to be able to, on the one hand, set the standard, and on the other hand, to be able to have the patience to be able to go along step by step until it is actualized. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Listeners may send their email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. That's PardesUSA.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.